All right, so today we're taking a deep dive into the world of plastic injection molding. We've got a ton of research here and opinions from experts to dig through all because you wanted to know what affects how long it takes to make a molded part. You know, it's pretty interesting to me that even the smallest changes to a mold's design or what kind of plastic is used can have a huge impact on how fast those parts come out.
Yeah, that's true. The small stuff matters.
Yeah.
We'll even get into why cooling some plastics is kind of like waiting for dough to rise.
Yeah.
You see, those tiny molecules need time to sort of line up perfectly to be strong, you know?
Okay, well, color me intrigued. So let's break down this whole injection molding cycle. I guess, where do we even start with that?
Well, there are five main stages: injection, holding, cooling, the mold opening up, and then the part being ejected. Each one of those steps is really important in figuring out not only how fast, but also how good the final product is going to be.
Okay, I can already imagine that first step injection. It's kind of like molten gold flowing into a treasure chest, right?
Yeah.
A big burst of energy. And then what is it? What's going on during that holding phase?
Well, that's where things get a little bit more less obvious. You know, the molten plastic wants to shrink as it cools, right? So the holding stage is all about keeping the pressure on to prevent that shrinkage and make sure the part stays the shape it's supposed to be. Kind of like a handshake. That firm grip really does make a difference.
Oh, okay. So it's not just about speed, but also about being really precise. Got it. And then you have the cooling stage. That's supposed to be where things can really slow down, right? Why is that?
Well, every plastic is different, and they all behave differently when you heat them up and when they cool down. Some are great at transferring heat. They get rid of it fast and cool quickly. Others, the ones we call crystalline plastics, they're slower because their molecules need more time to line up right.
Okay, that makes sense. So it seems like if you're in a hurry, picking the right plastic that cools down quickly could save a lot of time. Are there any examples of those speedy plastics?
Yeah, definitely. Polypropylene, for example, it's really good at moving that heat around so it cools quickly. But something like nylon, super strong, but it takes a bit longer to cool.
That's pretty cool. I'm seeing how what kind of plastic you choose can affect the whole project timeline. Our research mentioned that the size and shape of the part also matter when it comes to cooling times. I mean, I guess the bigger the part, the longer it takes, right?
Exactly. I remember working on a project where I was surprised by just how long a big, bulky part took to cool. It's one of those things you don't really think about until you see it.
So size definitely matters. What about the shape of the part? Do those complex shapes make it slower?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Shapes that are complex, the ones with all those curves and tight corners, those can make cooling much slower. You usually have to change the injection speed and holding time to make sure those tricky spots cool evenly and the quality stays good.
It sounds like a tricky balance, you know, speed versus being exact, intricate shapes versus being efficient. I guess mold design has a lot to do with all of this.
You're right. Our sources all said that a well-designed mold is like a secret weapon when it comes to speed and efficiency. One technique that really caught my eye is conformal cooling. Imagine cooling channels inside the mold that perfectly match the shape of the part, so the heat is taken away super efficiently.
That sounds amazing. Like having a custom designed cooling system for each part, it looks like conformal cooling can save a lot of time, like even cutting it in half in some cases. That's huge.
Yeah, it can be a big deal. And even with, you know, more regular cooling systems, there are still ways to design them to make things faster, like where you put those cooling channels and how big they are, even what kind of cooling you use. All that stuff matters.
I'm starting to see that every part of this process is connected, like a machine where even tiny changes affect the whole system. Speaking of fine-tuning, our sources were really interested in process optimization, taking this whole idea of precision to a whole new level.
Yeah, that's where science and engineering meet creativity. There are a ton of things to think about, like the injection speed, the holding pressure, how cold it is, and more. So many things can affect the end product. It can be a bit overwhelming, but luckily there are some great tools to help us figure all that out.
Tools like the design of experiments and the Taguchi method. I have to admit, those sound a bit intimidating. What's the basic idea behind them?
They're basically methods to test different settings and figure out what's best for making things fast, efficient, and high quality. Imagine having a recipe with a bunch of ingredients and needing to find the perfect amounts to make the best cake. These methods give you a way to test different combinations and find the one that wins.
Oh, okay, that makes more sense. So instead of just changing things randomly and hoping for the best, you're using data to make smart choices.
Exactly. And what's really cool is that even small adjustments to those settings can make a big difference in how fast and how well you make the final product.
Wow, all of this is super interesting. I'm definitely looking at plastic injection molding differently now. It's not just about metal and molding, it's about careful engineering, smart decisions, and constantly trying to make things better.
You got it. And the best part is, we're just getting started. There's a whole lot more to learn about this world of precision and how things are made.
Well, then let's keep this deep dive going. Stay tuned because we're only just beginning.
So, welcome back. We've been talking about that injection molding cycle, but now I want to get into something else that's really important. What kind of plastic you use?
You know, before we started looking into all of this, I had no idea there were so many different kinds of plastic, and they all, like, act differently when you heat them up or put pressure on them. How do you even know which one to pick for a specific part?
That's a really good question, and it came up a lot in what we've read. You have to think about what that part's going to be used for and match that up with how the plastic behaves.
Yeah, like, our sources kept mentioning things like durability, how flexible it is, and even how the surface looks. I bet a part that has to be really tough would need a special kind of plastic.
Exactly. For something like a gear, you know, something that needs to be strong or a part that holds a structure together, you'd want a plastic like ADS or polycarbonate. Those can take a beating. But if you need something with a bit more give, you know, like a bottle cap or a hinge that bends, then you'd go with polyethylene or polypropylene. Those are much more flexible.
And what about when you want it to look a certain way? Choosing the right plastic can make it look shiny or rough, right?
Absolutely. The surface finish is super important. If you need something smooth and glossy, you might pick acrylic or polystyrene. But if you want a more textured look, like something matte, there are certain plastics that are better for that.
It's pretty amazing how just choosing the right plastic can make a difference in how the part works, A&D, how it looks. Our sources talked about how crucial it is to test these materials to make sure they actually do what they're supposed to.
Yeah, you can't skip testing. You don't want to spend all this time designing and making something only to find out it breaks or doesn't meet the requirements. There are all sorts of tests engineers use to check how strong the plastic is, how well it handles impact, how flexible it is, all that stuff.
So it sounds like there's a lot to picking the right material. It makes you appreciate all the work that goes into making even the simplest things out of plastic.
It really is a cool field. And while we're talking about precision and doing things right, we kind of talk about mold design. That has a huge impact on how efficient the whole process is.
We talked about conformal cooling before, and that blew my mind. Creating cooling channels that fit the part exactly, like giving it its own little cooling jacket.
It's a really clever approach that can make cooling way faster, so the whole cycle takes less time, and ultimately it costs less to produce. But even if you're not using those fancy cooling systems, there are still smart ways to design the mold that can make a big difference.
Like what? What are some of the design tricks to make cooling faster?
Well, for starters, where you put those cooling channels and how big they are, that's important. You want to make sure the coolant is flowing to where the heat is the most intense. And the type of coolant matters too. Some are just better at moving heat away from the mold.
It's like you're designing the plumbing for the mold. Make sure the fluids are going where they need to go at the right speed to get things cooled down properly.
Exactly. A well-designed system prevents all sorts of problems and wasted time. Spending a bit more time up front to get the mold right can save a lot of time and money in the end. You know, we were talking about optimization, and our sources were really into fine-tuning the injection molding process itself. But they also said it can be kind of like juggling a million things at once.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. The speed of the injection, the pressure, how long you hold it, the temperature, and who knows what else all these things work together. It's easy to get lost in all those variables if you don't have a plan.
True. That's where those fancy optimization tools come in. Design of experiments and the Taguchi method. Can you give me a real-world example of how those work?
Okay, so say you're trying to figure out the best injection speed for a particular part. With a design of experiments, you test out a bunch of different speeds while keeping things like temperature and pressure the same. By looking at all that data, you can figure out what speed gives you the fastest cycle time without messing up the quality of the part.
Right, you're using the data to make the decisions instead of just guessing.
Yeah, and it's interesting that even making tiny tweaks to those settings can have a big effect on how fast and how well you make the final part.
Absolutely. This whole deep dive is really showing me just how complex plastic injection molding is. It's not just melting plastic and pushing it into a mold, it's way more involved. It's all about engineering, making smart choices, and always trying to improve things.
Yeah, I agree. And speaking of trying new things, our sources pointed out some pretty cool trends that are pushing the limits of what's possible in this industry. Oh, like what? Tell me.
One of them is using 3D printing to make the mold.
3D printing? Wow, I never thought you could use that to make something as complicated as a mold. How does that even work?
It's fairly new, but it's already changing things. With 3D printing, you can make molds with super intricate shapes and details inside that would be impossible to make the old way.
That sounds like a dream come true for designers. It must give them so much more freedom to make cool and useful parts.
Exactly. And another trend that's getting a lot of attention is using plastics made from plants.
Bio-based plastics, right. I've been hearing about those.
Yep, those are the ones. As everyone's getting more concerned about the environment, there's a lot of interest in plastics that don't come from fossil fuels and have less impact on the planet. These bio-based plastics are getting better and better, sometimes even better than the regular plastics made from petroleum.
It's nice to see that the industry is starting to think more about sustainability and finding ways to be more eco-friendly.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time to be working with plastics. With all these new technologies and materials, the possibilities are pretty much endless.
We've definitely covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, from how the molding cycle works to what's coming up in the future of the industry. And I feel like we've only scratched the surface.
You're right. There's still so much to explore and discover. Let's keep going with the final part of our deep dive.
Stay with us, everyone. We'll be right back with more insights and cool discoveries. So we're back for the final part of our deep dive. You know, I gotta say, the way I think about plastic injection molding has totally changed. Before all this, I thought it was pretty simple. You melt the plastic, squirt it in, let it cool, and you're done. But after digging into all this research, I see it's way more complex than that.
It is. It's like we peeked behind the curtain and found a whole world of super precise engineering, material science, and this constant drive to make things better. I bet you won't look at a plastic part the same way again.
Nope. Definitely not. I'm seeing those everyday things in a whole new light. There's so much cleverness and expertise in every one of them. Thinking back to what we've learned about the molding cycle, picking the right material, designing the mold, it's obvious that you can't just, you know, wing it if you want to make good quality parts quickly.
You got that right. Our sources were really clear about that. It's not just about understanding each step. It's about seeing how they all fit together and affect each other. It's about using data and looking at the whole picture.
It's like a really good orchestra. Every instrument, every musician has to be in sync to make the music sound amazing. And in this case, it's the mold designers and the engineers who are like the conductors, making sure everything works perfectly together.
I like that. That's a great way to put it. It really shows how important teamwork and paying attention to detail are in this field. So for our listener who's been with us on this whole deep dive, what would you say is the most important thing to remember about what affects the time it takes to mold a part?
I think it comes down to this. Even the tiniest change can make a difference in the whole process. Whether it's messing with the injection speed a little, changing the cooling channels, or even just picking a slightly different kind of plastic, all of that can have a big impact on how fast you can make the part A and D, how good it turns out.
And that's where really knowing the process inside and out and being willing to try new things, that's what makes a difference. Our sources were really excited about some of the new stuff coming out, like using 3D printing to make molds and plastics made from plants. That kind of innovation is changing the game.
It's so cool to see how this field is always moving forward and doing things that seemed impossible before. It makes me wonder, what's next for plastic injection molding? What other amazing inventions are coming up?
That's what's so great about it. The possibilities are endless. For now, though, I hope our deep dive has given everyone a good understanding of the important stuff that affects how long it takes to make all those plastic parts we see every day.
I think we did it. We accomplished our mission. So the next time you pick up your phone case, a water bottle, or even a toy, think about everything that went into making it. It's a pretty awesome example of how smart people can use engineering and creativity to make things better and better. It's been an amazing journey for us, and we want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
Until next time.